This is the Lubetkin on Communications podcast for Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. Hey everybody, this is Steve Lubetkin. I'm the host of this program, the Lubetkin on Communications podcast. In this program, we do some different things. We interview people who are working in the communications and journalism field. We also bring you some interesting seminar panels and conferences from various trade organizations like IABC and PRSA. In this program, we're going to have a conversation with Ken Jacobs. Ken's a good friend of the PRSA New Jersey chapter, where he runs the Senior Practitioners Group for people with more than 15 years of experience in public relations, and periodic panels and discussions with those folks around the state of New Jersey. Ken is the principal of Jacobs Executive Coaching. He offers leadership coaching to communications and public relations executives, managers, and leaders. He's been coaching them since 2007, and he's credentialed in coaching from the International Coach Federation and the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching. Ken's also principal of Jacobs Communications Consulting, which helps public relations and communications agencies specifically grow and manage business, improve client service and relationships, and enhance staff performance, communications, and leadership skills using all of the tools of executive coaching, training, and consulting. Ken's worked with a number of respected communications agencies, and before launching his companies, he spent 25 years in management and leadership positions with many public relations agencies familiar to the listening audience. It's a pleasure to welcome Ken to the podcast. He joins us from his temporary quarters near Princeton Junction, his former residence. He's in the process of moving to a new residence in the Asbury Park area in central New Jersey at the Jersey Shore. Ken, thanks for joining us on the Lubetkin on Communications podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Ken, you have been working with an awful lot of major firms in the communications industry, and I know you focus on helping them improve their performance and improve their leadership. How did you get to this point? Take me through your career a little bit and talk about what changes you made that got you to where you are today.
Sure. No. So I was in the PR agency business for more than 25 years. And I got into management very young. I got into leadership young. With hindsight, that had some pluses and some minuses. And I've worked at, you know, medium-sized firms like back in the day, DAY Public Relations, which became Ogilvy and Mather Public Relations. And then I worked at Marina Maher Communications during the glory years of the launch of the one and only Wonderbra, which was award-winning, and we're still very proud of that work. Worked at a creative boutique called Maloney & Fox. But ultimately, at age 50, I really had to take stock. To be very honest, jobs in the agency business after 50, not so easy to get. And I also sensed, like many people do at that age, that I really needed to reassess. And working with a coach consultant, as I was to become, but I didn't know at the time, but I worked with a coach consultant who helped me do the classic, you know, guided me to do the classic Venn diagram that it's so effective. You know, after all these years, what do I really love to do? One circle. Another circle is, what am I good at? And I got the track record, and I've got people who will tell the world I'm good at this. And what is there a market for? And I think you really do need all three to be successful, have fulfillment, et cetera, live a life of abundance, all those things. And my coach consultant helped me realize that I need to be a consultant and coach, you know, and at least initially facing the PR and communications world, but I'm still facing those great worlds. And I said to him, well, then I'd be a competitor of yours. Why are you guiding me into a career? Well, we'd be absolutely competitors. And his answer was, you know, there's enough agencies and agency personnel out there who can use our help. And I thought that was so generous and so appropriate, so attractive. I thought, yeah, sign me up for this. So I started doing it. And obviously had a lot of good connections in the PR world, people who had been clients, people who had been peers, people who had worked for me. And this is late 2006, early 2007, and things start tracking. I'm getting assignments. I'm getting return assignments from clients and referrals. It's all nice. And then the Great Recession of, I guess it was 2008, hit. So here I was serving this industry that was really hard hit by that recession and just trying to survive. So those few years were not fun. I had a couple of clients that really saved me by having big assignments in those years. And then it's been on building back and much, much more since 2010. And the last year and this year have been great, really.
One of the things that is very prominent to me is how people have become almost immune to efforts to handle them when it comes to communications. And so there's a lot of skepticism in the public about the role of public relations and how it's used to manipulate opinion in particularly the political arena today. What are some of the things you see people doing in the industry that maybe are, you know, not good leadership tactics to be using? And how do you encourage them to think differently about it?
Yeah, it's all about one word, which is authenticity, I think. And if you are authentic as a brand in your communications, authentic in your company, in corporate communications, and authentic as yourself as a leader, you're going to be more successful. Now, as a coach, I don't talk a lot about the negatives. You know, we talk about the opportunities. But so I start with the positives, and then obviously the opposite is true. And in a day and age where everyone is a publisher, right, every one of us can publish on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Facebook, you name it, Instagram, Triber, all those things. Everyone's a publisher. And so if you are not basically telling the truth, it's going to be very easy for people to find you out and call you on it. And the risk of that is huge, and I don't think it's a risk worth taking, because then you violate trust. And one thing we all know as PR people, that we tell our clients, you know, it takes a lifetime to build trust that could be gone in a heartbeat. And I think that's truer than ever. Again, whether you're a brand, a corporation, a PR agency leader, a PR agency employee, I mean, what I'm encouraged about are agencies like Arment Dietrich out of Chicago, but virtual, and they have this great blog, great community called Spin Sucks. And it really captures the idea that trying to spin as PR people sucks. It's not the right thing to do. It will backfire. We have so many tools now to truly build relationships with our publics, to publish content, to become experts in search engine optimization. There are so many things we can do to do PR, and I know many people don't like calling it PR anymore. We should only call it communications. I don't care what you call it. It's still about building relationships with and engaging with the right publics and the right influencers and the right stakeholders, what have you. But whatever we call it, you know, we can get it right and we should get it right. And again, those who violate that and spin, they're not for long, you know, not for long. They won't be able to.
When you first start an engagement with a client around coaching their executives and helping to build their leadership, what are the issues that you try to probe them about? What are some of the things that they bring up that are areas of concern?
Well, what I do is I do a 360, so I get input, whether they're a senior leader or one step below, depending on that, but I'll get input from their direct reports. I'll get input from their boss, if there's a boss. I'll get input from their peers, if there are peers. And It's really very simple. You know, I ask, what are five things you're doing as a leader and communicator? And I mention both because I think they're so related. What are they doing as a leader and communicator that's working? They should keep doing, because we should remind people what they're doing well, what's effective, what's getting the outcomes you want for your organization and your people and yourself. Keep doing it. You know, and what are five things you're doing that's not effective and they should either stop or modify? What impact is that having on the organization? This is always the toughest question when I share the answers. This is, you know, what might happen if they don't take action? And I don't say, you know, if they don't become the best at this, the best leader, the best communicator, but what might happen if they don't take action? And that news can be devastating to hear, but what could happen if they focus and they're open to their coaching and they, well, I don't even ask that, no, if they're focused and they take some action. And that's what encourages people to do the work of coaching. So I get that feedback from throughout the organization. I look for the trends. What are the big trends? You know, one might be doesn't always communicate in a way that builds trust among one's followers or one's peers. That's one that happens a lot. You know, not always treating people with respect, unfortunately, is another one. Is vague in their communication. So we get all kinds of things, and I put together a report with the major trends, the major observations, and then the backup quotes. And the reason I put in the backup quotes, and I cut and pasted so that you don't know who on my team said that. You know, you don't need to know that. You don't want to know that. You don't want to guess. But I put in the quotes because sometimes when people go through this evaluative process, they think, oh, they don't understand me. That's not true. Oh, that's just one person. And when they see four, five, six quotes under a statement, they know, this might be something I want to choose to work on. So leadership and communications, very, very intertwined. And another one, let me not forget, a piece of feedback we get among many agency people is they're good at PR, or they're good at digital, or they're good with clients, or they're good at building the business, but they're not really leading their people. So they're good at the PR communication side. They're good at management, and I don't associate management with people. To me, management is processes, budgets, accounts, calendars, production schedules, you know, getting the train out of the station, if you will. But leading is very different. Leading is all about people.
And what are the key traits? I mean, what are the things you look for in a manager or a leader at an agency as making them a strong leader of people? What are some of the traits they should have?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a very big difference. So some things that leaders do. Leaders motivate and inspire their followers. That's very different than managing a budget. And I should point out, most great leaders are good managers and have been good managers, but there are many managers who are great managers. They're not leaders. They're not meant to be leaders. They don't have a desire to be a leader, but we push them into positions of leadership. We push them into the trajectory. And now they got the big title, the big office, the big money. But they don't know how to lead people. Some can get there. Most can get there. But some won't, and that's okay. But I digress. So things like motivating and inspiring followers, things like trust. Trust is so important. And creating an environment where your people really, really trust you. And that often comes from your trusting them. People return the energy that they get. So it's about trust. It's about courage. You know, there's a lot to be said for attraction in leading, and I don't mean being physically attractive, but when you really attract followers like a magnet, like iron filings to a magnet, and people are attracted by courage and bravery. So I always tell folks I'm working with, you know, I don't, but many that if they have issues with fear, well, what can you do to be more like Malala? What can you be to be more like the captain who landed the plane on the Hudson River? What can you be to communicate more like FDR did during the depths of the Great Depression? Because that courage is very attractive. And I think what you want is you say, come on, let's all leap. And they all say, how high? We're with you. So there's that. One more I'd add, I mean, there's a list of around 9 or 10, and some days I expand it up to 12. But, you know, I think the being calm, centered, having that forward-looking vision and knowing you'll get there. And I love visuals. Have you ever seen like of that storm-soaked sea captain, you know, with the rain slicker on, you know, with the steering wheel of the, what's the word for that? A steering wheel in a ship. I'm sure there's a name for that. But, you know.
Ship's wheel.
Ship's wheel, okay. And everybody else is under deck getting through the storm, and he or she is on the deck. The wind is going, but he's getting them into the harbor. He's being careful of the risks, but he's so focused on that lighthouse and fully confident, centered and calm, that he will bring them there and bring them there safely. That kind of persona, aura, energy is very attractive in building followers.
Interesting.
So those are some of the things we work on.
You know, we don't see a lot of that courage in public life today. There's not a lot of leaders who are willing to come out and say, you know, this is the right course because there's a lot of fear of the pushback.
Oh, I'll resist the urge to go political, so I'll bring it back to PR, but to something that you said. You know, so here's our PR industry, right? And at least if you're on the agency side, you're asking for $10,000, $50,000, $250,000, $500,000 from your client, right? And on a regular basis. And one would think, therefore, that we'd have a business of very, very brave, courageous people and brave, courageous leaders. And there certainly are some. There are many. That said, I am amazed, maybe I shouldn't be at this point, how much fear is out there, how much anxiety, how much fear, how much worry. And then they wonder why no one's following them. People do not, well, politics of today aside, people do not follow fear. So I always say, well, bad news to the industry, but good news for me as a coach. So I can help empower leaders and executives to find their courage. And I'll tell you one, here's a trick. No, it's not a trick. It's a tool. It's a tool of coaching I use. So a client's approaching something from a fearful perspective, and I say, well, what if you were utterly without fear? Better yet, what if you were completely brave? What would you think? What would you do? For many of our clients, they go into courage mode. They say, I would say this, I would do that. I say, great. How would you like to try that? Yeah, I'd like to try. How good would it feel that your next client call, you're just as brave as you were right now? Oh, it would feel awesome. Okay. How can I support you? Great. And that works. But I've had clients who say, I can't imagine that. I can't imagine being courageous with my client or my team member or my competitor, you know, whatever. And I go, okay, fine. Think of the bravest person in your life. We all must know at least one really brave person who appears to be without fear. Now, of course, they're not without fear. They've just learned to walk through their fear. But imagine that person. What would they think? What would they do? And then my client can answer that. Oh, well, Steve Lebetkin, he would think this and he would do that. And he could do totally brave and brave kind of brave. How would it feel to try the Lebetkin approach? It feels great. So they have so much fear and anxiety in them. And these are prominent, you know, leaders, lots of responsibility, big payrolls, you know, all that stuff, responsible for people's careers and big clients. They have so much fear, they can't even imagine being brave. And then we ask them to, they always know at least one totally brave person. And it's almost like an internal role play, and it absolutely works. Absolutely works.
Did you ever go into a consulting engagement, a coaching engagement, where you looked at the environment of the client agency and you looked at the people who were in the leadership roles and you know, in the back of your mind, you said to yourself, this isn't going to work no matter what I do?
I'll give you a two-part answer. One, I've gotten, even when I started the business, I've gotten a little picky. And it's not about can I help them, not, but you know, I want to work with people and organizations, leaders and organizations who are open to positive change, sustainable change, and they're willing to do the work to get there. If in a phone call or two, my gut is that's not the case, I back away.
Yeah, you can sort of tell at this point which ones are not going to be receptive clients.
Right. Now, that said, and coaching and consulting are actually quite different, and if we have time, I'd like to explain that. But in the meantime, you know, if I'm judging that I can't help them, well, that might be about my own fear. That might be about the way I'm interpreting what they're saying. That might be me not being open, as all coaches should be, all leaders, executive coaches should be, that there's inner wisdom in all those people. My job is not to judge them. My job is not to tell them what to do. My job is to help them uncover what's getting in the way of their greatness. So I've got to be careful not to be too judgy and saying, you know, they're unhelpable. They're unstoppable. You know, they're unhelpable. I can't. That's a judgment. And what I should do is say, what might be getting in the way? Do I think they'd be open to doing the work? Should we begin the journey? You know, what's the mutual chemistry? What's it feel like? Let's see. And I'm going to try so hard to empower them. So that's sort of a two-part answer. My meter, my BS or whatever, my I'm not going to really change meter has gone way up, or I'm going to be a jerk client. You know, that's gone way up. But at the same time, if I think this just isn't going to work, I really do stop myself. And I do what we call self-coaching, and saying, why are you judging them? Everybody's got the capacity to change if they want to. So it's sort of a two-part answer there.
I want to let you define that difference between coaching and consulting, but before you do, I want to flip the question around and say, you know, is there ever a case where you saw an agency or an organization, and you said, boy, I can really help them improve things, and they weren't picking up on what you were putting down?
So far, that hasn't happened. I'll be honest, there have been some where I feel, you know, they're doing the work and they're getting there, and they could have had this 2 years ago. You know, maybe they could have had it 2 years ago and worked through it. And then I say, but, you know, people are ready for change when they're ready for change. They're ready to do it when they're ready to do it. And who am I to say that they should have done it 2 years ago? Yeah, that's, I don't do that. I give them everything I can as a coach. I help them put their plans into action, or their goals and dreams into action plans. We add deadlines, you know, we do all that. And sometimes the fear, and sometimes it's lack of time management. There's all kinds of things. So I'm careful not to judge them. I'm careful to be there for them. But no, we tend to have success. And again, that's partly because I'm on the lookout to engage with clients who I sense will be open, will do the work, will go deep. Because, you know, when you're being coached, you learn something or two about yourself. You know, so if I'm on the lookout for that raw desire to make change, you know, usually they do. And sometimes the speed with which they embrace it and the speed in which they create positive change, that can be amazing. And that, of course, is what makes the work very fulfilling.
So go ahead and sharpen the fine point between consulting and coaching.
Sure. So not every consultant would agree with this. Maybe not every coach would, and maybe not every consultant coach would. But that said, to me, I consult with organizations, and it's my sharing my knowledge, my wisdom, experience, and saying and recommending, here is what I would do. I can help you implement, or you could implement on your own. Thank you very much. And that can continue. You can consult in business development, and then you can consult in managing for profit, and then you can consult on, you know, attracting talent and retaining talent. So you can consult. That's an organization. To me, coaching is with an individual. It could be the CEO of a firm. It could be the EVP. It could be a senior AE. But it's very much one-on-one, and maybe even more important, not about my experience, not about my advice, None of that. It is using a process. It's using empowering questions. It's using my coach's intuition, frankly, which I've been honing. And it's not me telling them what to do. It's me empowering them to figure out what they want, how do they get there. It's supporting them. It's being their cheerleader. But the biggest difference is, for it to really work and hold and sustain, it doesn't come from my brain and through my mouth. It comes through their brain and their mouth. And that's the neuroscience of it, frankly. Don't ask me to explain what happens in the brain, but science shows, and my experience certainly shows, that if I'm coaching Steve Lubetkin and I think there's something maybe he should do that's the solution to his problem, and if I say, Steve, here's what you got to do, and Steve will say, yeah, kid, great, oh my God, I got to do it. Might happen, might not, won't be sustainable. What I've got to do as coach is use all the questions that I've been trained to ask so that it comes through Steve's brain, through his wiring, and Steve's mouth. Now, when that happens, sometimes Steve will come up with the solution that's not what I would have thought of, and that's perfectly fine. Because this is the solution that he's going to do, he's going to take, he's going to do it, he's going to implement. Maybe I can help him with scheduling and deadlines and keeping on track. But this is going to be far more effective. Now, if they come up with a solution, and I think there are some nuances I might like to add that I think will make it a little better, I might say, and I don't think I'm violating any coaches' standards here, by saying there are a few nuances, may I share them?
Of course.
And then I'll try to do it as a question again. You know, have you thought about blah, blah, blah? Oh, no. Okay, Ken, what am I going to do there? So I ask permission, and then I go back into questioning. And I think, honestly, as a consultant, I've always used coaching questions, even before I was a trained coach, because I guess deep down I knew if I did it with a question and it came through them, they're more likely to. So I think I've always had a coacherly, if that's a word, approach to consulting. But to me, there is a difference. And there are times a client will say, can you please go into consulting and just tell me what to do? And I'll say, well, is that the way to create the change you really want? They'll say, no. Okay, ask me a question. You know, they get it. They think they want to take the easy way sometimes, but then we use a question to make them realize, you know, what's the prize here? What is it really trying to achieve? And all my clients get it. You know, they get it. We talk a lot. Not a lot. We talk about the process of coaching and what works and all those things. So when I resist answering, they know why. And they know it's because I want what's best for them, and I want to support them in their desire for positive, sustainable change, for themselves, their organizations, and their people.
Over the years that you've been doing this, has anything changed significantly in either the issues that come up or the way that you approach them?
I think the more I coach, the better I become at it. I think that I'm doing a lot of self-coaching to be mindful not to be the issue we talked about earlier, judging my clients. And if I am, I kind of go deep and say, what's going on here? So coaches do a lot of self-coaching. I've got a coach, just like I believe therapists are required to be in therapy. Coaches aren't required to be in coaching, but if they are, they're going to be much better. They're going to be much better coaches. So I think it should be required. I'll tell you the change I see, and some of it's positive and some less so. There are so many more coaches now because there's such recognition that the process can really be effective. What's problematic and concerning to me is that just about anyone can say, hey, I'm a coach, just like you can say, hey, I'm a nutritionist. So it concerns me that people are doing what are trying to do, are claiming to do what trained, certified coaches do, though they may not be trained and certified. I'm very proud of the fact, I'm very proud of my certifications from the International Coach Federation and from IPEC, where I did my training, the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching. You do a lot of training. You do a lot of field work. You read a lot. You self-coach. I mean, it's work, and it's worth it. And then you take tests, and then you've got to keep up with your continuing ed credits. But I can say, you know, I'm certified by these organizations, and I'm trained, and, there's a value that I like to think that I bring based on this knowledge. So it's great that corporations, organizations, agencies, people more and more appreciate the value of coaching, but I think like any industry that's growing that quickly, there are those who want to take the shortcut. And that's a shame.
Well, it's all great advice. And Ken, I appreciate you taking the time to share it with our listeners on the Lubetkin on Communications podcast.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Ken Jacobs is the principal of Jacobs Executive Coaching and Jacobs Communications Consulting in Central New Jersey. He's on the web at jacobscom.com. I'd also like to remind you that I have a book out about podcasting. It's co-authored with Toronto podcasting pioneer Donna Papacosta. It's called The Business of Podcasting, How to Take Your Podcasting Passion from the Personal to the Professional. The book has its own website, thebusinessofpodcasting.com. It's available on the Amazon Kindle and in trade paperback, and we'd greatly appreciate it if you'd pick up a copy. If you have comments about these programs, write to me. The email address is steve@lubetkincommunications.com. We produce the programs in our studios here at Professional Podcasts, which is one of our divisions at the Lubetkin Media Companies. We're on the web at beingthemedia.com. Thanks very much for listening, and take good care. We'll see you out there on the net.